Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm airing an interview I did with the multi-talented, exuberant Antoinette LaVecchia. Antoinette is here, starring in the one-woman play I Loved, I Lost, I Made Spaghetti, which is based on the book by Julia Malucci and currently running at the Oslo Repertory Theatre Company. Antoinette not only plays the main character, she cooks a complete meal on stage and serves it to five tables of lucky audience members. This means an appetizer, wine, and she makes her own spaghetti from scratch and the sauce from scratch as well. Antoinette is multi-talented, but she is also delightful and charming and funny. So hang on, here comes the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice. Oh, you really can. Deeper, deeper down
Show. The Lynn Show is about being all that you really are. That is, not pretending to be something that you're not, not hiding something that you are, not being in denial for something that is really true of you. As a psychotherapist, it is clear to me that so many of us are forced, encouraged, or maybe it's discouraged, from demonstrating all that we are. Of course, quite often this happens in our family of origin. Something that is natural to us doesn't go down well with our families. Some way that we're behaving, or some skill that we seem to have, or something that we look like even, can bring teasing, neglect, embarrassment, sometimes punishment, sometimes even abuse. This can come from parents, of course, but it can come from siblings. And it doesn't have to happen in the family. It can happen in school, unfortunately. We hear more and more about bullying in school. That is, kids being teased and tormented about things they can't do anything about. What they look like, what they sound like, what they smell like, what they wear. And sometimes it isn't anything about them. This is invented by other children who need to feel better than. Sometimes adults need to feel better than. The end result of this is that too many of us, as I said, have been discouraged from being all that we are. And because we're so clever and flexible as human children, we figure out first how to hide these things, and then over time we actually forget that we have these things. The problem with this is that it takes energy to suppress parts of ourselves. Anyway, the theme of the Lynn Show is that it is better when you have access to all that you really are, and that it is never too late to recover parts of yourself which you had to deny, hide, pretend, lose, because you can't actually lose parts of yourself. You can hide from them, you can forget them, but you cannot lose them. That's the theme of the Lynn Show. And if you want to learn more about this, you can go up to my website, thelynshow.com, thelynneshow. Don't leave the E out of Lynn, thelynshow.com. And up there on my website, you can get a copy of my book, When You Can, You Will, Why You Can't Always Do What You Want to Do and What to Do About It. You can get me to come and talk to your group or organization. You can contact me, ask me questions. Also, on the website are all the shows I have ever done in podcast form, which can be downloaded from the website and also downloaded from iTunes. That is all the shows I've done and all the interviews that I've done, including the one I'm doing right this second. That is the show I'm doing right this second and the interview I'm about to play. And the interview I'm about to play is with a woman who knew from virtually the beginning of her life what she was, wanted to do, needed to be, was an actor. Even when she couldn't put words to it, she knew in herself that that was who she was. And she had to overcome a number of obstacles to honor that certainty. And so she is a perfect person to be interviewed on The Lynn Show. And as I said in the run-up, she's also charming, exuberant, and funny, and delightful. And after I play the interview with Antoinette, I'm going to play a review written by Pam Wiley about the play I Loved, I Lost, I Made Spaghetti, in which Antoinette is currently starring. So here now is Antoinette LaVecchia.
Okay, I am here with Antoinette LaVecchia, and I am here with Antoinette because she is starring in the one-woman play, I Loved, I Lost, and I Made Spaghetti.
Yes.
Right. And it's a tour de force. I mean, really, it is a challenge. It's really hard to do what you do, and you do it. I mean, I was there opening night. She is she's delightful and charming and funny and alive and exciting and continually interacting with the audience.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And a lot of stuff happened that might have thrown someone else but didn't throw you.
Mm-hmm.
You were wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you.
So I want to talk about the play.
Yes.
But first, I interview people who make their living or their life with an art.
Mm-hmm.
And it is clear.
Mm-hmm.
That you make your life, and at least now you're living.
Yes.
right. As an actor.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So I only ask one question.
Okay.
And that is?
I'm scared.
I actually don't think you can't know the answer to this.
All right.
Is that a double negative? Well, never mind. The question is, do you remember, can you recall, can you tell me, the very first moment in your life when you thought performing, having people look at you, having people laugh at you, be in another character, not when you got your first job or you thought you wanted to be an actor, but before that?
You know, it's so interesting because, I found a journal that I wrote when I was 8,
mm-hmm.
and I talked about wanting to be an actor when
wow.
I was 8. I have no memory of this. But this is the one, I think, this is the memory where I think I knew what I wanted to do. And this is unbelievable because I was 2.
Yeah, yeah.
It was on the plane
mm-hmm.
When we were emigrating. My mom and my brother and I were meeting my father in the States. We were leaving Italy to meet him to move here permanently. We were on the plane, and my mom had two toddlers, spoke no English, and I must have gotten loose from her on the plane. My first ever memory is walking down the aisle of TWA, landing in the laps of strangers, and I just remember looking into their faces and their delight. I just remember that delight they had. And I think, really, that is it. I believe you. Something was so visceral that I remember that memory. Now, I don't remember anything else until maybe 6, 7, 8, but I remember that.
I think it's the delight. I think that, you know, I mean, what are we here to do? You know, what are we here to do in this world? Whether you're an artist or work in an office or, I know, and I know this more as an adult, I'm sure I did not know this as a child intellectually, but as an adult, I really want to kind of like just spread light wherever I am. I want to do good, you know, and as an adult, I really appreciate serving, you know, serving the world in some way. And I realized now that, you know, this acting is not, I love that audiences come and have a great time, but I don't need that recognition as much as I desire the people to feel lifted, walk out of the theater with their spirits lifted, their hearts open. That's what I love. As a child, I'm sure there was other things, but boy.
Well, no, it seems to me that that is what you experienced as a child. You made the life of this person better.
Exactly.
You didn't have to do anything.
Nothing. Also, being of two different worlds.
Yes.
You know, my parents, I mean, all of our relatives stayed. Very, very few came here.
And so why did your parents come?
You know, economics.
Yes.
My dad wanted
better.
A better life for his children, for himself, and he had help. You know, that there was a wave of, not immigrants, they were Italian citizens who would come, work, go home. Come, work, go home. Come to the States, work, go home. And then they would get two pensions. They would just, they just worked.
It's right.
The immigrant philosophy, work. And my grandfather helped my dad. And there was another cousin here, an uncle, helped my dad get a green card.
Right.
One thing led to another. Right. And, but I think because I, and I think it's DNA, I think it's destiny, whatever, but also being of two different worlds that are so wildly different, because my parents are from a small farming community that didn't, no televisions, you know.
Yes.
We were so much more advanced here, the States, and they kind of followed very slowly. Of course, now with cell phones, everybody is up to date.
Right.
But what old world, new world in the most extreme case.
In your house.
In my house.
Right.
So I just think with my personality, I loved that I was of so many different worlds. And I'm the one, I have two brothers, but they're both in business and advertising, but I'm the one who kind of like followed in this artistic way. And I do think, you know, voices, different languages, it all fascinates me. And that people have different perspectives about life and different traditions.
And then you can do them.
And then I can do them. Right. And I can be them. And I love that.
Yeah.
Because I don't, of course, I identify as being an Italian woman and I identify as being an American, you know, from the States. But I also identify with everyone.
Yeah.
And I think that that level of compassion that we all hope to develop as we get older, that is, and I think children have it before they get trained in school and the media. But I think that level of compassion is what makes certain artists stay because they want to express it.
Okay, so now, so we have you at 2.
Yes.
And then you said you don't have memories until 6, but by 8 you already knew there was such a thing as an actor.
Oh my gosh.
So did you go to movies? Did you get it? What?
Well, we moved on to this estate where my father was the caretaker, and we were isolated. So we're totally isolated. Very few people lived on this enormous estate. And I spent so much time creating things, and I was alone so much, surrounded by gorgeous nature, and I would just read
And my dad bought me this tiny little black and white TV set. I'd watch old movies for hours, hours. It was, you know, I felt as if I was supposed to be born in a different era. You know, Betty Davis, Ginger, Fred and Ginger. I was watching all these black and white movies that I adored and old television shows. And I would read, oh my gosh, I always had a book in my hand reading outside. And I just loved disappearing into my imagination.
Ah, yes.
Loved it. I think I do remember kind of acting out the parts in the book alone, sitting on the rocks by the water. We were so lucky to live there. And so I think I was alone a lot because I had two brothers, and they were always off with the boys.
Yeah, yeah. Did you go to school?
I did go to school, yeah.
What was that like?
Well, you know, it was a foreign... I remember showing up first grade with two long brown braids, gold hoop earrings in a very, very waspy town. And, you know, I remember at the time there was a girl named Buffy in my class. And I remember her looking at me like I was the strangest thing that she had ever seen. Mm-hmm. It was odd. It wasn't the most comfortable
No, but this is yet another thing.
Yes.
I mean... You're standing out.
Always.
Right.
Always.
Right. It's a different kind of standing out
mm-hmm.
than the delight in the people's face.
That's right.
But it is nonetheless standing out.
Absolutely. And I became very much an observer.
Mm.
My mom was so terrified, which is very normal for people. She didn't speak the language. She was just... fearful. She was
yeah.
really young. She didn't understand what was happening. So she... And I was the only girl... So she kept me home. I'd get invites to birthday parties. She would always turn them down.
Mm.
It was terrible for someone like me because
yeah.
I needed... So I spent a lot of time alone outside of school.
So now, her fear was for you or her fear was being lonely?
Her fear was fear.
For everything.
She was afraid of everything.
Right, right, right.
You know, now she's on Facebook. I can't even believe it. It's just so shocking to me. And she says she says she wished she wasn't the way she was then, but she was terrified.
Yeah. Right.
Everything was just too new and foreign, and she didn't have her family with
right.
her.
Yeah, no, she didn't have anybody.
Nobody.
Right.
So
you learned to speak English.
Oh, my gosh. My brother and I, he's 13 months older than I am, we came here. I was 2 and he was 3, and we watched so much television. There was a TV in all the very few photographs we have from that time. There is always a TV on in the photograph.
Wow.
And it's always on Honeymooners, I Love Lucy. I actually met Lucille Arnaz about 5 years ago, and I said, I learned English watching your mom's show. And she goes, well, it wasn't from my dad. It was so great. But we watched so much TV.
Right.
But we were so little, so my brother and I kind of created our own language between the Honeymooners, I Love Lucy, and the Italian until my parents couldn't understand us. And my dad, from what he tells me, he freaked out. He's like, what did I do to my children? Nobody understands them. So when I was 4 and my brother was 5, he brought us to some kind of reading group, and we learned English that way. But we literally took off on our own and created our own.
But yet again...
Yep.
Right?
Always.
It's all about creation for you.
Absolutely.
Right, right, right. So here you are. You're this little kid who is, it's an interesting dichotomy because you're this little kid who's really attached to the impact she has on others,
mm-hmm.
but she's all by herself a lot.
Oh, my gosh.
Right. So you
so
pretty
true.
Much had to create all the others. Otherwise,
all the time.
All the time, right.
All the time.
Right, 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 right. So you were acting really... Right?
Oh, and my mom, she worked in sweatshops when we first got here.
Yeah, cool.
And but there were tons of Italian women and Spanish women. But at the time, she went to one that had tons of people she knew that had emigrated, not relatives. Some were relatives, mm-hmm. but there was one huge family of my dad's first cousins, 10 brothers and sisters. So we glommed onto them. And I'm so close to them now because they were us. They brought us in. And so she worked with them in the sweatshop, and she would bring home scraps of fabric. And in my bedroom, in a third of the mansion, because we lived in a third of the mansion on the estate, was this enormous mirror. And I would take all the fabrics that she didn't want, and I would create costumes. I was a gypsy, I was a queen, I was this. I had Barbies that my second cousin had given to me, old Barbies. I would create movie sets in my room. I don't know where I got this from, but it was just happening. And I was alone, and I had just so much imagination that I needed to kind of express.
It's wonderful.
It's just wonderful. What it is.
Okay, so by 8, whether you remember it or not.
I don't remember, yeah.
You're writing in your diary, I'm going to be an actor.
Yes.
Pretty amazing.
When I found that journal, it blew my mind.
Do you remember anything else from there that it said about why or how or any what kind of actor or anything? No.
No.
Just this.
I wanted to be an actor. It's as if, you know, there are people who say, I don't know what I want to do, etc., etc., and I never understood that. I can understand that someone else not know what they want to do, but I never felt that.
No.
It's always been this. Yeah. But I've also within...
Well, wait. Oh, follow me.
Yes.
So, okay, so in elementary school, in junior high school, were there plays?
My first audition was to be a cheerleader. Now, I wasn't that interested in being a cheerleader.
No, really, not in a play, but a cheerleader.
But the audition process was so exciting to me. I didn't even know. I just wanted to get the part, whatever.
Right.
And I got it.
Oh.
Of course, I didn't last long because I don't like cheerleading. I just didn't. I like cheerleading as a person.
Yes, right.
Not the outfit. It seemed so ridiculous to me at the time. But I loved the auditioning, which I think is hysterical. And then I was in the choir in junior high. And then there was some audition. This is also in junior high school to do, of course, first grade, I was in some concert and I played a teacher. And I remember loving that. I think I was 6 or 7. I remember loving it, not understanding why, but just loving it. But in junior high, there was some kind of event in the gym. And I got to play, they did one scene from Midsummer Night's Dream, and I played Quince. Mm. The actor, the manager, right, of the mechanicals in Midsummer Night's Dream. I remember, I wore a beard, you know, I have pictures of this, I look ridiculous. But I remember loving it. And then in high school, I finally took an acting class.
So now before this, no acting,
nothing.
No drama class,
oh,
no nothing.
My parents would have.
No.
It's still to this day they ask me to quit every day. They think theater has destroyed my life. It's hysterical. They're so proud of me.
Yeah, no, I just
totally think theater is the reason I have food allergies. Theater is the reason I got divorced. None of this is true, by the way. I have a food allergies because I'm, you know, that they have allergies. They just don't admit to them. They think they have an upset stomach. But anyway.
Okay, wait.
Yes.
Because this is really interesting to
me.
Because at what point did they begin to understand that what they had was someone who was going to do this thing they didn't want her to do?
When I told them that I was going to graduate school in an acting program.
Okay. Let's back up. Okay. So you're Quince.
I'm Quince, and...
And it's yet again, it's the same thing over and over again.
Over and over and again.
Right. Okay. So then what?
In acting, in the drama class, I discovered... I had a phenomenal English teacher and a phenomenal acting teacher, and... I was exposed to Tennessee Williams, and I went crazy for Tennessee Williams. I discovered Shakespeare, and I went crazy for Shakespeare. It's just that, and Arthur Miller, Death of a Salesman, and King Lear, Death of a Salesman, Streetcar Named Desire, Glass Menagerie, these are plays that I discovered early on in high school that blew my world. Mm-hmm. It just blew explosion in my head, how much they moved me, how much I identified with them. I was 16, but I was identifying. I wanted to play Blanche. I was 16 years old. The mother in Glass Menagerie, I think I did a monologue as Amanda Wingfield in Glass Menagerie when I was 16 years old. And I was like, I am a great actress. I remember thinking that to myself. I am a great actress. Which 16-year-old wants to play Amanda Wingfield?
Yeah, well, what's interesting is that you didn't want to play
Laura.
Laura, right.
No. I was Amanda Wingfield and Blanche. I mean, come on. It was hysterical.
What is it? Do you know what it was about these women?
Well, you know, I have such, my mother is sort of my muse. I mean, obviously I stayed home a lot, and she and I spent a lot of time together, and, you know, she never understood me. She loves me. Never understood me. Amanda Wingfield does not understand the daughter, but I knew how to play the mother.
Yes.
Better than the daughter.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
It does.
And so, and also...
Well, wait a second, hold on. You clearly knew how to play the mother because you watched it.
Watched it, exactly.
Right. But you were not Laura.
No.
No. You couldn't play Laura.
No.
That wasn't, right?
No. But I love that character. Oh, my
goodness. Yeah, but Blanche is another story altogether.
Oh, I love Blanche.
Oh, okay, so Blanche...
Yeah. I don't know. I just loved her crazy imagination.
Right.
Her living in this fantasy world, which I totally understood.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, I also love now. 25 years ago, I was exposed to the rose tattoo. And now that is a role I'm going to play. But I'll tell you this. Southern United States is so similar to Southern Italy. Their close-mindedness, but also their...
Passion.
Passion. Yeah. Their theatricality. Their intolerances. The drama in the family dynamics.
Yeah.
It's so similar. So I really got it.
Yeah, right.
You know.
Tennessee.
Oh, my God. So that's where the Blanche came from.
Yeah, right.
And I've been able to play her in workshops over the years. So I started when I was 16, but I did some in the 30s. I've done some in my 40s. And I'm like, wow, this is...
Any minute now, I'll be
any minute.
Right.
Any minute when I dye my hair a different color.
Right.
But, okay, wait. So...
unbeknownst to your family, you are discovering, in a concrete way, what you have always known.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Deep down,
right. But it's just, the world has shown you that what you were naturally drawn to actually exists. There's actually a thing. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, so beautiful. And, you know, I didn't inherit, but, you know, there's that thing where... children kind of mimic their parents.
Mm-hmm.
So my mom had all this fear. So I kind of took on her fear. But it wasn't the real me, right? And what I discovered when I was on stage was I was fearless. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the most delicious feelings for me, to feel that fear. I could feel angry. I was in love. I could do all these things without repercussion, because at the end of the night, you take off your costume, you're done. But I loved living in those states of whatever the character was going through. And me as a person, that feeling of fearlessness on stage was something I just didn't feel in real life at all.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
So you become addicted to it.
I'm sure.
Because it was safe. You're safe on stage, under the lights, in the costume. It's all about safety.
Oh, God, this is so interesting, because I would bet that a lot of people would tell you that that's not true. That for them,
It's terrifying
to be
up there on stage. That's right. It was the total opposite.
Right.
Complete opposite.
Yeah, and what's so wonderful about it, I think, is that you got to experience on stage something that's incredibly important for you to have.
Oh, yeah.
The recognition that you are capable of being fearless.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. And, of course, you can make a living doing it.
Well, thank God.
Right.
Most times.
Right.
And, you know, it's also about, because, again, my parents were very strict, because I was the only girl, and they were immigrants. And
right.
They stayed in 1969, 1970 Italy, small town. But Italy was changing rapidly, but they, in their minds, they kind of were stuck. So I was like, you know, protected from God knows what.
Oh, my
what.
God, and two brothers.
Two brothers, but they did whatever they wanted to do.
Well, no, I meant...
Oh, right, yes, exactly. And so I did not feel free.
That's right.
And I was on a 400-acre estate, which, as a child, sometimes felt like a prison, because I couldn't get out.
Right.
So with the fearlessness came complete freedom on stage.
Yeah.
It was absolutely
here I am.
right? No apologies.
No,
right? I can't get in trouble.
Right. Oh, it's so interesting because I'm quite sure that generally speaking, most people feel exactly opposite about
it. I know.
You know, I have to be so careful because I can do it wrong and they won't like me and this and all that stuff. You got none of that.
I'm sure sometimes I feel nervous.
Right.
But yeah. No, it is the opposite.
No, it's a free. It frees you.
It is the opposite. And
yeah, you get actually to be Antoinette on stage.
Oh my
through
gosh.
Through these other people.
Absolutely.
It's amazing.
It is amazing. And more so, I think, when I was a teenager, I needed it.
Yeah.
I needed to feel that freedom and fearlessness because I wasn't developing it at home.
Yeah, right.
You know, other kids were out being social.
Yeah, well, they'd all been at those parties.
I was learning everything on stage. I think my first kiss was on stage, and I was like, oh, my God, because my parents were just so strict. But, of course, as I get older now, all I want is more balance. It's like I want to live life as freely off stage as I do on stage. And I've had a lot of opportunities. Obviously, you get older, you have life experiences, which only make you a better artist.
Yes.
You have to
Everything live. Everything is grist.
You have to live your life.
Right.
Because otherwise, you can't just live in the pretend world.
No, no. And anyway, you started out using your life.
Yes.
Your mother, your experiences at home. You started using that. So the more stuff you have to use, the more stuff you can use.
Absolutely.
Right?
And what I didn't mention is that my parents have very strong Italian accents. And around 15, you know, when teenage girls are struggling with their mothers specifically and parents, I started imitating my mom, telling stories about my mom with her accent. I would play both roles. And people would laugh hysterically. So I found a way of storytelling to deal with the stress
of the struggle between my mom
and I. And I even wrote a one-woman show called How to Be a Good Italian Daughter in Spite of Myself that I had a 10-week run in 2009 in New York City. And people love it, but because it's all true. I mean, it's very funny. It's 55 minutes. But it's very much about what we're talking about
now. Yeah.
And I think, you know, I'm sorry, immigrants... People who are, forget immigrants, it happens here too, but people in small towns, more rural, you find the best storytellers. And my grandmother, the people in our town in Italy, my relatives, you have some extraordinary storytellers. They don't do it for a living. But
they do it for their own entertainment.
That's what it is.
Right.
You know, and so
That's where it all started. That's right.
So I feel like if I have any gift, it's just DNA. It's just my ancestors.
I'm sure that's true.
Still,
but you could get it and not use it. Lots of people have that and they didn't run with it.
True.
Okay, so you said that that they figured it out when you were going to graduate school. So did you go to undergraduate and majored in something else?
I went to Cornell.
Oh.
And my parents said thankfully I got a nice scholarship. It was great. But my parents said, if you study theater, because they knew I liked it so much, I did all the shows in high school.
Ah.
They're like, if you study theater, we won't pay. We won't help you. And I was like, uh-oh. So I was an English major.
Oh, very clever.
But also, I might as well have been a double major with theater because I took all those classes.
Right.
And I think in the 4 years I was at Cornell, I believe I was in 30 productions.
My God.
I did everything. I knew it was my chance to learn everything I possibly could. I did everything, little things, big things, everywhere. One-night things, whatever you name it. And then I auditioned for grad schools without telling my parents.
Wow.
Because my dad, every summer, you know, other kids who wanted to go into theater, every summer they'd do an internship at a theater.
Right.
My dad would get me a job in an insurance agency in Connecticut.
I see.
Every single summer.
Right.
And he's like, this is a good job. This is a good job. And I was like,
Oh, your parents, it's amazing. I mean, what's so amazing about it is that, well, for me anyway, I mean, and I think a lot of people do this, but not quite like this, where you were so clearly who you were.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And you were so clearly following that path, like, you know, like a limpet on the really, right? And they really couldn't see it. They couldn't see it because that's not what their daughter was supposed to be.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
And my will was so
strong.
Even though I am, oh my gosh, I cry at anything. Thank God I'm emotional. I use it on stage.
Right.
But, you know, in real life, if I see a movie, I just, like, you know, I'm a puddle of tears. But boy, when it came to this, when it came to acting and theater, there was something bigger than me, I felt. My will was bigger. It was, I couldn't control it. Yeah. I mean, honestly, I don't know where it came from, but it's strong.
Yeah.
Okay, so you managed to finesse undergraduate.
Yes.
Right? And you get out with a degree in English and a hell of a lot of theater training.
Yes.
And then you finally work up the nerve to say, you know what?
With that, and you know, it's, God bless my parents. As much as they were in shock when I told them, they helped me find a free place to live in New York City.
Wow.
Yeah. I had to nanny at night. It was my first semester. I had to be a nighttime nanny, and I lived in someone's supply closet, which we zhuzhed up, but on the Upper East Side, because I went to NYU's graduate acting program. But, you know, there was no... Even if they said no, I was going to do it anyway, and I think they realized.
They finally got that.
They knew.
We tried to make her be who she's supposed to be, but never mind. We didn't, and so...
Right. And to their credit, even though they asked me to leave this business every day, my parents helped me out.
Yeah.
They helped me out. They love me. They will support me. You know, my dad has a wedding gift to each of us when we got married. He gave my brothers like a small deposit to buy a house.
Right.
You know, as a beginning,
a little
deposit. But didn't give it to me when I got married, which was in hindsight perfect. But I was always like, why? Because he thought, you live in New York City, who wants to buy an apartment? You need a home. Thankfully, I got it after I got divorced. Which I think was perfect in hindsight. So, you know, they helped me get my first little apartment in Queens, really far out. But that has helped me so much as an artist in New York City, having a home that I own. And that only happened because of my parents.
Yeah.
And so, unbeknownst to them, or they have laid a foundation of such incredible support, even though verbally they are telling me to quit every day.
Right.
They are really, really supporting me. And so other people don't have that.
No,
and I know how lucky I am.
I hear the opposite a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how hard it is when you're not supported.
Oh, emotionally.
Right.
Listen, it was not an easy childhood, and I love my parents. But, you know, locking horns constantly, that misunderstanding that there's just, you have to surrender.
Yes.
And a lot of hurt. But I think... Now, I appreciate all that struggle because, boy, do I love them. But it's also because I know how far we've come.
Yeah.
We've come so far in us trying to understand one another. And I lived with them for 7 months in between apartments when I was 42. Oh, my God. We were driving each other crazy. I was like, someone's going to die in the middle of the night and another one will be in prison. But at the end of it, we laughed so hard because we all realized this, no adult child should live with their parents. But I gained so much, I don't know, whether I just understood them deeper. And
them
more.
The other thing I find myself thinking is that, you know, when you're a child and your parents don't get you,
right?
It feels like an assault. It feels like an attack.
Yes.
Right? And so you aren't actually able at that point to understand that you don't get them either.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
They're human beings.
And that's what they're feeling.
Yeah.
They're feeling, don't you get it? This can't be right. And of course, because your parents are really loving people.
Yes.
All of what, generous. All of what they were doing was an attempt to protect you.
That's it.
Right. And they didn't...
And give you a good life.
Exactly. Unfortunately...
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, right. But it wasn't... there was no malice in it. It was all from love, right?
Absolutely.
And in the end, that shows. And in the end, you feel that, right?
In the
end, you get that, right?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, they'll come to my shows.
Uh-huh.
My mother wants to see everything. My dad's not a huge theater fan, but my mom would like to see everything if she could.
Well, so how did she like the one-woman show about her?
Oh, well, I had... the first time I did it was a workshop form, like in mid-2000s. And I had my friends sit near her because I was so scared.
Yeah.
They said she laughed so hard.
but she was weeping. She was laughing so harder than anyone else. She loves that show. She wants it to succeed. She's like, you know, find another producer, you know, and I'm just like, oh, Ma, she wants me to succeed so much. I mean, as much as she thinks it's, you know, she blames theater for my divorce and my food allergies.
Right.
She still wants me to be successful and make money. She'd love for me to have my own TV show or star in films. She'd love that.
Yeah.
And I got to be in an opera celebration at Carnegie Hall. I don't sing opera, but I spoke a fable in an ancient Italian for which is included in Puccini's first opera. And I got to perform with famous opera singers and an orchestra and a choir. And as I was speaking the fable, the orchestra moved. They began to play, and then the choir joined in. It was magical. Carnegie Hall. My parents came for the first act. The second act I wasn't in because they work. They get up at 5 in the morning. So they ran to New York City. They came. They've never been so proud of me. I wore a red gown. I borrowed a necklace. They were so proud. And those pictures, I always go back to those photographs because, oh, I've never seen my parents just so beaming, proud, happy to be there because they were with 2,000 other people, mm-hmm. you know, appreciating
you.
Me.
For a moment.
And I just think, you know, their worries about practical things are very big.
Yes.
You know, how are you going to
pay for it?
Pay for your life.
Right.
Their big thing now is we're not going to be around forever,
right,
if you have an emergency. But I always tell them, don't worry about me. I'm good.
Yeah.
And I taught at NYU grad for 7 years, 7 fall semesters, teaching improv and games. And my parents were so proud of me.
You're a teacher.
Yeah, I was a professor.
Yes, a professor. Oh, my God.
They were so proud. But, you know, but when I lived with them, I saw myself in both of them. I was like, oh, I got this from him. I got that from her. And you start to realize that, you know, they've given me so much.
Everything, actually.
Everything. Everything. And so I just started, even though I cannot live with them, nor should I, I really appreciate what they've given me, their genes, their love, their support. I mean, I'm a big fan of theirs. Their generosity.
Yep.
You can't be a good artist if you're not generous.
No.
You can't.
No.
That's even when I watch other artists, those who are generous are the ones I respond to. And I learned generosity from from my parents.
It's the same thing as compassion.
Absolutely.
You know? Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the play.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Say whatever you want to say about it.
Well, what I love about this play is that so many people say it's their stories. They all think I'm the real Julia Melucci. But I will say that I do use a lot of myself. I'm not imitating Julia. She's very different than I am. And yet we're very similar. But I do use myself, because if you change some of the names of those guys, it could be my story as well, especially post-divorce, the men I've dated in my 30s and 40s. What I love about it is that it's so unique, that people respond to the cooking as something like a visual art form.
Yeah.
The fact that the forming of the dough.
Oh, yeah, it's wonderful to watch you do it.
The cutting of the spaghetti.
Right.
Becomes this visceral.
Oh, yeah. No, right. And, you know, I didn't know, because I've never made spaghetti from scratch, that the same piece of equipment that brings out the long, thin things also cuts the things.
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Well, you have to buy it that way. I think you can buy one that just rolls it out. But yes. It's incredible.
I'm fascinated by that, and I'm watching, right?
But, you know, I've met people who are not just Italians or with an Italian background, but I've met people who were elderly, mm-hmm. who came from a Jewish family, whether they were immigrants from Eastern Europe, but they said, my grandmother used to make noodles at
like
home.
Like that, yes.
And so people are remembering something in this, and especially our technology-filled world. The play is a little old-fashioned.
Yes, it is.
Because I'm making everything from scratch.
Right, yes.
You're watching everything.
Yeah.
And I'm talking about love.
Yeah.
Yes. Two very primal.
Food and love. Food and
my
love.
My God.
Okay, did you know, could you do this before the show?
The pasta?
Yeah.
The rolling?
Yeah.
Well, when I was a kid, my mom made homemade pasta every Sunday.
Ah.
And my mom is an amazing Italian cook. She doesn't have recipes.
Yeah.
She just throws.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She couldn't give you a recipe if she tried.
Yeah, right.
And I remember when I was married that I finally, you know, your mother's sauce. For an Italian, your mother's sauce. I will tell you that when I figured it out, and my sauce, now, my mom can make a million sauces. I'm just talking about one sauce.
Right.
When I figured it out, it blew me away.
Mm.
I was so happy. So I knew that is something I did before. But when I was a kid, I was my mom's sous chef.
Ah, of course.
So I watched her with the pasta. I watched her roll it. I never really formed the dough. Sometimes when she was making bread. But with the pasta, I was always near her. And I would, do you know what cavatelli are?
No.
It's a pasta that's popular. And in order to make it, you have to roll into these long, kind of like spherical noodles, but then she'd cut them into little bits, and with my thumb, I'd have to form them.
Uh-huh.
So I would get calluses on my thumb every time I had to do that for her. So I was making fresh pasta with her as her assistant up until my teen years.
Wow.
But then, many years passed. I never made homemade pasta between my teen years and when I started doing the show.
Wow.
But what's fascinating is that my hands remembered.
It's like the bicycle.
It's absolutely like the bicycle. My brain, I was like, oh, okay, I think it's there. But my hands totally knew what to do.
So I'm just curious.
Blows me. And the director is also a cook. So he and I...
Rob. Yeah, right.
He's also a fabulous cook, and he helped me a great deal.
So what I'm curious about is, was this part of the audition? I mean, did they ask you to do make pasta?
Yes. Rob did ask me, but I knew Rob. We had worked many... We had done a few shows together over the years, and I think I made a lasagna for one of the cast ones. But he... Oh, he saw my one-woman show. He knew about my immigrant Italian background. He's like, she must cook.
She's it. Right. You're right. Right.
And he knew that I had a lot of experience doing one-person shows.
Mm-hmm.
He already knew that about me.
Right.
So he says that he thought of me
immediately
for this show. And so I'm very grateful for that. And Julia and Jacques now feel like family.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like this group of us that just feel like family.
Did you say that you were in the chorus, and does that mean you sing?
I do sing. I sing like in a cabaret, a small room.
Yeah.
Let's do that. As a birthday gift to myself this year, I want to hook up with an accompanist and create a song list and start working on something.
Cabaret.
On a cabaret. Because before this show came up, which is hysterical, I already planned to tell stories about bad dating.
Right.
But instead of cooking, I was going to sing in between the stories.
Very nice.
And then here I have this show that did it does everything I wanted to do in my show, except I'm cooking instead of singing, which I think is very funny.
It's very funny, and you can find a way to put that together now.
That is my intention, so yes.
Okay, so I have one more question, and it is, having given a life to the work of acting, and you have, is there anything you would say about what that's like?
Well, gosh, it changes. Why you choose this life changes because your needs as a human being changes, and in my 20s, the life of an artist meant a different thing. I wanted to be famous. I wanted blah, 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 you know. It was also superficial, which is true for the 20s. Makes sense. But as I get older, it's what I was saying earlier. I'm so proud that I'm doing something in service. And that's what it feels like. But it is in service because there's something people don't realize. Yes, acting is so fun. Yes, from someone's perspective outside the world, it seems so glamorous, et cetera, et cetera. But it's a lot of work. And, you know, what people don't realize is, for example, with this show, I have to be on vocal rest most of the day. I can't do anything strenuous. An actor doesn't take many vacations, you know, because you're always waiting for the next job and want to be available to audition. There is a level, it's so silly to say, but I'm going to say it. There's a level of sacrifice when you really do this nonstop. And it's not a sacrifice that I feel in any way upset about. I'm happy to do it because it really fuels me. But there is, it's an interesting, because we're the entertainment. When people want to go out and have fun, we're the ones, or fun, or be moved, mm-hmm. or congregate with other human beings to feel the same thing in one evening. There's something very sacred about it for me now, where I'm at now. And I love it, and I love it when, like the other night, opening night, someone said to me, I felt sick all day. I didn't think I was able to come. I saw the show, and I feel like, she said, I just feel so good right now. I can't even remember feeling sick earlier. And I think that's why we keep doing it. And there are people who leave because of very real things, financial issues. The business side can be so demeaning. But those of us who continue to do it, that's what keeps us going, I believe. Is, especially when there's not the glamour and the money. And the but it's that level of feeling as if you're doing something really positive in the world.
It's so funny because it's just what that little two-year-old was doing.
Oh, my gosh. It's so true. Mm-hmm. It's so true.
That's a great place to stop. Thank you so much.
Oh, my God. My pleasure. What a treat. What a treat. I had no idea it was going to be so fun.
So there we have Antoinette, the passionate, enthusiastic woman who was, as a toddler, interested in, concerned about, desirous of making other people feel better. Antoinette came into this life with the desire to please, to uplift, to have a positive impact. And she has spent her life doing it. If you were listening last week to Dick Hamilton, you heard him say that as a two-year-old, his mother could control him by playing music. The minute he heard music, he was mesmerized. And so, of course, he grew up to be a man who made his living and his life with music. For me, this is all proof that there are natural inclinations. There are things that we are born with, that people like Antoinette and Dick are unfortunately too rare. That is, that they recognized these instinctual responses and, in Dick's case, was encouraged to pursue. And in Antoinette's case, she simply was too stubborn not to. But they made a life based on who they actually really are. So is this true for you? Did you have some impulse? Did you fall in love with crayons? Did you want to write down everything? If you were listening to Harry Bryce several weeks ago, he said, as soon as he could write, he was writing what he thought and felt before he understood that it was poetry. Did you have something like this? And it doesn't have to be a skill or a craft or an activity. It could be a way of looking at things. It could be a way of thinking about things. Did you have that? Do you remember that? Are there stories about you when you were a child? Were you able to hold on to that? Do you still have it? Can you still use it? Well, I hope that listening to Antoinette, I hope that listening to all my interviews, inspire you to look into your heart and see if you had to leave something behind. So now I'm going to play me reading Pam Wiley's review of I Loved, I Lost, I Made Spaghetti. I Loved, I Lost, I Made Spaghetti is a saucy one-woman show based on Giulia Meucci's book of the same name. Starring Antoinette LaVecchia, the story is full of expectations of love, the belief that the best way to get a man is through cooking for him, but the realities of the men make that not easy. The production currently running at the Oslo Performing Arts Center in the Cook Theater is very entertaining. There, on the stage, is a complete kitchen. And Miss LaVecchia, as she relives the life of the character Giulia, proceeds to cook a three-course spaghetti dinner for five. Giulia is a warm, charming, pathos-filled woman with self-deprecating humor, and LaVecchia's performance is splendid, rich, and very funny. Her cooking was vouched for by raves from the five couples who sat on stage watching the meal being prepared. It costs a little extra to be fed during the show, however, it is worth it. The aromas that fill the theater as the cooking proceeds are mouth-watering and made us all wish we could taste it. The book was adapted to a play by Jacques Lamarre and delightfully directed by Rob Ruggiero. LaVecchia measures ingredients, stirs the sauce as needed, makes fresh handmade noodles, and serves each course, all while chatting about her loves and losses. I Loved, I Lost, I Made Spaghetti opened on May 21st and will run through the Sunday matinee on June 15th. Do go to have a terrific time and be inspired to make your own spaghetti from scratch. As always, I hope you got something you can use from this show. Something that inspired you, something that made you curious, something that made you laugh, something that will bring you back. Because as always, I will be back next week, same time, same station, and as always, I sure hope you will be too.
You see, I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. You see that I have had my shot. My time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes, every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix